Welcome to the Short Rod Show. You're talking with Ben.
And you got Brett.
Hey, thanks for joining us, everybody. Down here in the basement, cranking out episodes through this shortened ice season now. Seems like we've pushed and pushed, and I think ice is finally here, though.
Yeah, I think it's going to be here to stay at least until the end of the season now with looking at the forecast. Yep. I don't know. I haven't got on the pond to see how thick it was yet, but it's held ice. It's been locked up since at least I don't know.
Yep.
What's today? Friday, Monday, Tuesday?
Probably a week and a half.
Or today's Thursday?
Week.
Yeah, it's been locked up for at least a week, I think.
Well, and we're recording this on the Thursday before the Sunday when this comes out. So yep. We're like on the brink of the deep freeze.
This is the bleeding edge.
Most of the ice belt.
The bleeding edge.
That's exciting, although we have a little bit of snow in the forecast.
Pile of snow. See, I don't think, I think people worry about that too much. Like, oh, we got a little bit of ice and now we got snow on top and the ice is going to suck and all that.
You do.
People worry about that too much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, you're not going to get that nice, crystal clear, clean ice. Mm. But what happens is the water comes up, forms slush, freezes, and now you got 8 inches of ice. Done.
All right.
It's just frozen slush.
Yeah, frozen it still can solid. Be strong. But yeah. You still want to proceed with caution.
Sure, and you'd always proceed with caution out there. But I think people blow it up to be, especially with how thin the ice is right now that we have, I think people blow that up to be too big. Oh, it's going to insulate it, and we're not going to build crap ice, and it's not going to grow, and people build that up too much.
And I saw it right away. Here in Central Iowa, we had about 10 inches of snow on Monday.
Yep.
And that basically sank through the first layer, or it blended in.
Yeah,
Tuesday, it was just a slushy layer on top. It wasn't even snow.
No.
It was part of the ice.
So it'll be frozen solid. And now all of a sudden we'll have 5 inches ice.
Yeah. Yep. But it's not getting cold until after the snow.
I mean, it's pretty cold today.
It's not that cold though. 25 degrees.
Well, that's cold enough. It'll get cold tonight.
It'll get cold tonight.
So but then now tonight we've got 5 to 10.
100 inches. Yeah.
I've seen pretty wide 15. Range.
Exactly. And blowing. Blowing will might help.
Yeah, blow. I don't know that you don't have that clear, clean surface on the ice. I don't know that blowing is going to blow snow off the ice. In my neck of the woods, it'll probably pile more snow on the ice.
Well, around the edges.
Because it'll be,
absolutely.
Yeah, it'll drift it'll in just a lot.
Fill it all in there. But anyway, that's one of the topics we're going to talk about today. But what else are we going to talk about here today, Brett?
A little bit of gear update. I finally bought a reel for my Saki fishing.
Excellent. Rod. Now you're ready to put it on the ice.
And then Ben's got his Hog Outdoor lights mounted.
Yep.
Ready to rumble.
Talk about those babies.
And then we're going to dip a little bit into science. We're going to get into some science. We're going to put our science caps on, our lab coats.
Exactly.
And we're going to talk about barotrauma.
With a disclaimer that we're not biologists
or fish barotraumists.
No. But it's been going around the internet. Good stuff to talk about. So looking forward to that. But yeah, so today, where we stand, I think the bulk of the people that listen to this podcast will start to get out on the ice. I mean, there has been some that have been able to, but that's been a select few versus what it normally would be by this time of year. So really unusual ice season, super warm, not a lot going on. And usually we get a deep freeze and then a thaw a little bit and then another deep freeze. We just went right to a bunch of snow and a deep freeze coming up.
Well, and that's really reflected in our viewership. I feel like people are just biting at the bit. So then they're just eating up any sort of ice fishing media, podcasts, stuff that they can pick up. Because, listenership has been excellent so far this season.
Yeah, you guys, we definitely appreciate all that. You know, all the downloads, all the comments, all the messages. Keep it up. We love interacting with folks. Go on iTunes, on the Apple Podcasts app. Rate our podcast. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Write a review on there if you'd like. But it just helps other people find the podcast. And there's still people every day that do not know about the Short Rod Show as a podcast and haven't listened. And then they get in it and generally they like it. We're not for everyone.
And that's what helps people find it.
Yes.
Is those star ratings. Because then all of a sudden we start sifting to the top, which we do sift to the top, thanks to all of you guys.
Yep.
I mean, pretty well right away with Cody's help. And then now that we've got a bunch of ratings on iTunes and a bunch of positive reviews on everything else, we pretty much sift to the top.
I will say we did get a good plug from some of our viewers that are on Trick Your Trap. So thank you
really?
For that.
I missed that.
asking about diesel heater advice. That is awesome. So, you know, just to get called out like that, that's how we find some more people too, because you know, folks want to learn about diesel heaters but maybe haven't heard the diesel heater podcast that we did. Go listen to that. You know, that'll give you a good info there and
a nice deep dive into a real life situation or scenario.
I'm definitely happy to help. I know we went back and forth with a listener, now a new listener, about just how diesel heaters worked, what I did, some things to look out for, that kind of thing. So
that's awesome.
That's been cool. But yeah, no, definitely we're down here cranking out episodes every week through the ice season here, and we'll be out on the ice having some content from the ice.
What episode are we on?
This is season 5, episode 11.
Nice. Dang. I thought you were going to slip up.
Yep. Season 5. We got to get that pinned down. Yeah. We got railed on that in the beginning for mixing up seasons.
Yep.
But time does fly. It's crazy.
Yep.
Crazy stuff. But yeah, so the season's coming up. Just getting into high gear here coming up too. And I saw a post from a guide on Brushy Creek talking about how there's no ice today, Thursday.
Yep.
And so the snow's going to fall. No big deal. And then it's going to freeze.
It's supposed to be pretty windy. I bet it doesn't freeze over until Monday.
Yeah, but then it'll just snap of a hat. As soon as the ice dies or the wind dies, it just freeze.
It'll freeze over because it's real windy up in that country.
Oh, yeah.
So once it, they got to wait for the wind to die down first.
Yep. So, Brett, tell me about your Saki fishing custom rod that you chose.
Last episode, you know, I said, because I recall saying it because I listened to last episodes, which I rarely do, but I did have time in the car to listen to last week's episode. Yep. I said, I'll probably just wait until, you know, crunch time, and then I need to go get one.
Yep.
Well, we're in crunch time, and I went to Fleet Farm to go buy one, and they only had about 3 reels left on the shelf.
Dang.
So I bought a 13 Fishing. I think it's Redline is what it's called. It's black with, like, red... dark red accents.
Okay. Not an inline.
No, not an inline.
Ooh, all right.
It's just it's a regular spinning reel.
Excellent.
It also coincided with being the cheapest one. No. And there was an HT one that was a few dollars cheaper.
What? It's just a step above an HT?
Yeah, it's only a couple bucks more than
an
HT.
So what are we talking, $12?
$28.
$28?
Yeah. It's probably the third most expensive reel I've owned.
See, in my eyes, HT is like, that's real low budget stuff. It is. A $10 reel, you know, it'll do the job for how long, nobody knows, but
it'll do it. Yep.
But it's $12, but dang, $28.
What sold me on that one was the brand.
Good for you.
This was just the 13 Fishing brand.
13 Fishing.
Being on the budget.
Their own thing.
Reel.
I'm pretty sure I saw something in Target Walleye. Maybe they got bought by Rapala.
Oh.
Or like the rest of the shares that the owner had got bought out.
Sure.
That's, I don't know. Kind of a bummer, I guess. I like seeing some of those more independent brands continue on.
I don't know the history of 13 Fishing. I don't know where it started or how it got going.
I just know, like, you know, we're looking at the Free Fall Ghost inline. Like, that's a pretty revolutionary design. It's not the best, but it's different than everything out there.
Sure.
Like, they kicked off that drop lever kind of design reel. That's kind of cool stuff.
Yep.
But nice. So what are you putting on for line? Or do you want to take this line home with you?
Nah, I've got some Suffolk Advance at home. Ice.
4 pound.
3. I like the 3 pound.
3 pound guy.
Yep.
Nope. It's like human hair.
I like the odd number poundage for some reason. Whenever I can get it.
Do you bring up odd numbers? Like when you set the temperature in your car, I can't do odd numbers.
I go 69 every time.
You got to be 69. That's it. That's the only temp you need. Yeah. So speaking of that, in other gear news, I guess I was out in the garage 2 weeks ago now. Yeah. Yeah. Messing around New Year's even and figuring out my lights because have my two sets. It's just two light bars from Otter. And these are the original Otter Pro LED lights. So I think the first year Otter did lights, they were like really cheap, super flexible, like junk.
Yep.
You remember seeing those? Like the real flat ones?
Was that the first ones you got?
Yeah, not the individual LED like.
Yeah, it was like a strip.
Lights. Yep. And so I put those up. They were pretty bright, but they'd only last the season.
Yeah.
Like they were terrible quality. And so the next season, I got the Otter Pro lights, stuck those babies on, and they're pretty good, but they're super white, like operating room, office.
Kind of burns your eyes a little bit.
Fluorescent white, you know?
Yeah.
Which is fine, but like most of the time when you need lights, I feel like you're out in the dark. You just want something that's kind of natural, or they dimmed, which is good, but
yep. I like a yellow light, especially when it's darker and then you go out and you can't like go outside and it's still bright out.
Yep. Yeah. So I was trying to figure out how to wire these, and I realized I made a mistake buying the hog light kit that I bought, because I bought basically two standalone kits. One was the starter kit that had two light strips and a dimmer, and mm-hmm. then the wiring that goes to your battery, right? And then you can piggyback six lights off of that string. But then I also bought another single light, but that had a battery clip on it, the connector going to the light, and then just the light, just one light.
Mm.
But there was no way you could connect just that one light to the rest of those other lights that I had. Like, oh. that had to be the first light in the string to make the connections work, because it was like male to female plug backwards, basically, if that makes sense. Which, not a big deal, because I ended up getting a little creative.
You just had to switch them around?
Nope, can't.
Oh, couldn't at this point? Can't.
I could never hook those two lights that I had.
Could never hook up to your third one.
To the third one.
Oh, dang.
No matter what, I was like, oh, I'll just put this third one first, put the second one second, third, like flip it around. Didn't matter.
Yep.
So, not a knock on Hog Outdoors by any means, or at the ice show. I got it at the ice hole power booth, because that was all they had. Oh. Like that. I literally was like, oh my gosh, you have hog lights.
You got the last one.
I got to get them.
Yeah.
So, got a little bit creative, and I ended up leaving the otter lights on the shelter.
The old ones?
Yep. Because I'm like, what am I going to do?
They still work.
Take them out?
Yeah.
What am I going to do with them? Give them
put them on the outside.
Give them to you? You're all about outside lights.
Yeah. Just I want people to see me.
Just to see. Okay.
Well, so you can see around you. A lot of times you end up fishing outside a little bit.
We could do that. We could do like, okay, I got some ideas for that too.
Okay.
I think that might be more like portable lights.
Sure.
Like that Milwaukee light that I have, the big area light.
Yeah.
Something that you can hang up and take down. Because I don't know how you'd put something permanent on the outside.
No, I don't know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I do like the idea of area lights. A little tractor floodlight out there or something.
Just so you can see.
I got some ideas.
Let people know.
We'll test them out on our Guttenberg trip, because I actually have some lights in the garage that'll work.
Sweet.
But we'll be out night fishing up there for sure.
We're just not going to stop fishing, because that'll be 90% of our ice fishing.
Exactly. It's going to be 4 days straight of just ice fishing.
Going hard.
But so I left the outer lights up, and they're spaced, you know, on that center bar looking right down the middle, right?
Yep.
What I did was I turned those to face back in the tub a little bit. So I gave that kind of a 45 degree, and then I spaced the hog lights in between there. So I have two hog lights at 45 degrees pointing down to where you fish.
Okay.
Okay.
So they're kind of 90 degrees from each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's cool. And the way they hook around there, easy.
Eliminates like all shadow, basically.
No problem.
There's probably no
what
shadows.
I liked about those hog lights to do that on was the aluminum bar, like the heat sink bar that's built in, super sturdy. Like nice. They're not
going
you
anywhere.
You can't crinkle them up. You're not going to like crack them by moving them around. Like they're sturdy.
Yep.
And then that third light, in order to get that to work, I ran that to the front. The very front, so like right above where you fish,
right above
the door.
Yeah.
And I have that pointing right back down at your holes.
Oh, yeah. So you got different angles.
Yep, so different angles. So like if you had the live scope set up and you wanted to put a hole on the other side, it gets dark over there.
Yeah.
Like you're blocking all the light to that
now
hole.
Now you got no shadow.
Now I
no
can
shadow.
See everything.
You pretty much eliminate all shadows.
It looked nice way. In there. When I stepped in there, you could stand in the middle of the shelter, and yeah, there is light all around you. You could tell like it was not blocking your
nice.
Path. So
that's legit.
That was cool. The hog lights, I really like them for the color. Like the color is, okay. So like down here, you see these two light bulbs.
You're going to have to describe that on
yeah,
the
but there's
podcast.
There's a very white one.
Yep.
And then there's like a more normal one.
Yeah. 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 I get the same look on over here.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
That's what they look like.
Oh, nice. The little yellow.
Kind of more yellow, like natural sunlight kind of colors.
Yeah.
The only thing about them is they are, I don't think they are as bright as the outer lights.
Well, it's because they're already a yellowish light rather than a white light.
And they put out plenty of light. Like, that's going to work great. They're just not as bright as the otters. Like, you crank the otters all the way up, And you look at them and your eyes are like twinkling.
Well, good.
So I have the best of both worlds now. Because actually, I don't care about the light in the back of the tub as much. Like, I just need to see back there.
Yep.
But when I'm fishing all day, I want to look at something nice. Like, nice light.
That'll be a lot easier on your eyes.
I like it a lot. It turned out really good. Running for power on that, too. It was pretty slick because I made my own little, like, multiple wire harness connector pack going into a round barrel plug.
Oh.
Did the same thing, just run it to a DeWalt heated jacket adapter right to the DeWalt battery.
So you got two batteries now?
Just the single battery for the lights. Nope, I ran it all into one.
And then you got another battery for the diesel heater then?
Yep.
Oh, I was thinking that was the same battery
for some reason. No, I'm keeping them all separate.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I figure, you know what? Yeah, it's no big deal.
If we have to, we can cut the lights and keep the heater going.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yep, absolutely. And then, so throughout the year, like, I always have two DeWalt batteries in that Otter case.
Yep.
Just, like, year-round. Like, I just keep them charged up. Those are my, holy crap, we got to spend the night out over here.
Well, and those 9-amp-hour batteries, they last forever.
Oh, yeah.
Those things are huge.
There's a lot of juice in those things. I actually figured out those two batteries are the equivalent. Shoot, what was it? I think they're equivalent of, like, a 40-amp-hour 12-volt battery.
Oh, really? Yep. Oh, geez.
Which is, you know.
That's a good size battery.
Half the size of a car battery.
Yeah.
You know, that's a pretty good amount of power in there. So,
have you gotten any of those power stack DeWalt batteries yet?
No, uh-uh.
I haven't even seen one in the store, I don't think.
I see them tested, like that Torque Test channel. You ever watch that guy?
No, not specifically, but I've watched a couple of them.
He's got some good stuff. Testing out different batteries. And he actually, so Hercules, the Harbor Freight brand, they make a 12-amp-hour battery now.
Oh.
And it's only like $100, something like that.
For the battery?
$100. Yeah. Nice. It's a massive, you know, 18-volt battery.
Yeah.
So, anyway, he's got, we could go on and on about power tool battery stuff, but he actually made a Franken battery backpack.
Ooh.
Where he put like 8 of those 12-amp-hour Hercules batteries together and ran like heavy gauge cable into a power tool to get like the maximum amount of power for as long as possible. That was pretty cool.
Worked good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Killed it.
Hmm.
Yeah. So run it off the DeWalt battery still. That seems to be working well. It's just, it's a step down to 12 volt. So takes a 20 volt.
That adapter steps it down.
The heated jacket runs off a 12 volt plug and I just plug a barrel plug in it, clip the battery on. The only thing to watch on that, I mentioned it before, but don't leave it plugged in.
No, you got to unplug them or it'll
it'll run it down to zero.
And then they're dead.
Your battery's junk.
Yep.
So then you got to try and sit there and revive it.
Yeah, and that doesn't work out well.
Doesn't work.
Sometimes you can get by with taking them back, sending them back to DeWalt, and you can get a new one or something. But
well, I'm kind of at the point where I probably need to revisit my DeWalt batteries because they're old.
Yeah.
You know, I look back, like they're all 2016s. Yep. Basically, is when I kind of got in. Is like, I need to get something.
Really spent the money on them.
Yep. But anyway, the hog lights, I'm looking forward to using them. Get them out in the dark. We'll try them out. We'll run them through the ringer here in Guttenberg.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're going to be fishing hard. I think we'll have Alex's hub shelter out there.
Yeah. That worked out real good. Yep. Having a little home base and then skirting around town and in yours and stuff.
Well, it's nice to have a big sled to haul stuff too, I think. Yep. I feel like that was good. Yep. But we'll bring the small sleds too.
Yeah, having those jet sleds are a nice addition.
Yep, absolutely. Also, wired up those lights on the quad. Put one on the front. Did not do anything on the back.
You wired up those. You just mounted those battery powered ones.
Yeah,
yeah.
And actually, what I did was you're gonna laugh because I
cordless ones, not battery tied them. Oh, that's fine. I wouldn't
to
laugh
the rack that. Because I do that. By the time I messed around, I drilled a hole for a bolt, ran a quarter 20 bolt in.
Oh, that I forgot I had that.
Where I could thread that in. And then I'm like, this is dumb because I'm going to have to sit there and unthread this big light, you know, and make it have enough clearance around everything.
Yeah.
And then by that time, I got to mount it so low that what's the point?
You're not going to get anything.
I need light up high,
yep,
casting out across the ice so I can just see.
So zip tie was the solution.
Zip tied right there. I'm like, you know, the worst case scenario, I have my Garmin mounted on the like windshield mount.
Yep.
And I already have the jacket adapter with a USB plug. I could freaking charge it off a Milwaukee battery.
Oh, yeah.
Right on the quad.
Ready to roll.
No big deal. Because, geez, one of those Milwaukee batteries will run my Garmin and from the ice.
It runs this podcast for sure.
Absolutely. So powered by Milwaukee batteries in this case.
And DeWalt somewhat. But, yeah. Nice.
Good stuff. So, yeah, things are looking up. We're ready. Literally all I have to do is throw these rods in a case and get out there.
Chomping at the bit. Yeah. So you think you're going to try to get out this weekend at all?
I want to. I think I'm really debating just setting the shelter up, fire the heater up on that little pond across the road.
Yep.
Let her sit for a couple hours and go back out there and mess around.
We'll see what the wind will be the only thing that stops me from trying to get out because I'll have to bring the kids with me.
Yep.
And obviously the ice thickness. But
yeah, but it's going to be -4 for the high on Sunday.
Yeah. As long as it's not super windy, then come sit in the shack with me. We got to get out of the house anyways. Do something.
Oh, yeah. You guys will go nuts in there for sure. But yeah, our last topic. So touching on the old barrow trauma.
Yep. So what brought this on, Ben?
So it's funny. So after the last time you were here, it was in between Christmas and New Year's, remember?
Yep.
And you left to go home. I ran a couple errands, came back, fired up the YouTube app, and it first thing on my YouTube app was Uncut Angling has a new video.
Which has been a while.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. Been a long while. This is a big deal. Like, you know, Aaron's kind of been off the radar for a little while, doing his own thing, getting, you know, whatever. And this video comes up and it's talking about barrow trauma science.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this looks awesome. So, of course, fire it up right away. Start watching it. And his disclaimer at the front and like the way he approaches showing people what he's talking about and, you know, hey, I think there's some more here to unpack. That's like, it's a 40-minute video.
Yep.
You know, this is practically a movie.
I mean, he's specifically looking at,
you know,
fishing deep water crappies, basin type crappies that are 30 plus foot of water, specifically right around that 35 foot range. And traditionally the concern is, you know, pulling them up out of that deep water, their swim bladder pops out of their mouth or they have too much extra pressure in that and they can't swim back down. They get stuck. They float up to the bottom of the ice and they die. Yep. That's kind of the issue or the concern with it. But,
So that got me jazzed up about just, I'm like, this is not just an Aaron Weeb Uncut Angling video. This is like, this is a drama series.
Oh yeah.
He's to the point where I wouldn't say he's an expert in fish biology, but like he ranks up there. Like he's been on the water enough and has handled enough fish.
He's seen a lot,
you know? So that's what intrigued me for him not being a fish biologist or DNR, you know, that kind of person. He's very, conservation based, you know,
so what
protecting
he did,
the resource.
So I want to explain the video a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, go ahead.
So what he did was he really kind of challenged the traditional theory of how those fish die from barrow trauma.
Yep.
Where he would take them, pull them up out of that deep water, and the real key is just to get them back in quick while they still have some energy and they can make their way back down. The way he proved that they could still get back down is he'd just follow them with his live scope until they got back down to the bottom.
Yep.
I would say the only hole I can find in his protocol of how he went about his process of showing how he didn't believe that these fish were having barrow trauma problems as long as you got them back quickly was this the thought of the kind of timed or delayed mortality.
Yep.
Because once they got back down and they kind of re-intermingled back with the school, you couldn't really tell which one was there anymore. But they all did. I mean, I think it was 10 out of 10 or whatever, did make it back down. Some of them struggled a little longer than others, but they all made it back down to 30-some foot. And once they got down deeper, and it makes a lot of sense, is that pressure builds as they get back down deeper, and it's just easier for them to get back down as the fish continues to climb or continues to get depth. One part that I found was interesting was he was specifically, when you would put them back in the water, make sure you get that air out of their mouth.
Yep.
So you dip them, you'd have your fingers in their mouth, you'd dip them, submerge them underwater, so those bubbles would come out of their mouth, close their mouth, then flip them over and send them straight back
down. Yeah, an air bubble come out almost every time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was an interesting
aspect. And his hole was clear of slush. I know we've all done it. You leave some slush in your hole, and you just dunk the fish down.
Yeah, and then they got how many times ice do they shards.
Swallow a chunk of ice? Yep. You know, chunk yep. of slush
right in their gills. That doesn't do them any good. No, that's any fish, not even a barotrauma. Absolutely. Fish
with that. Yep, yep. And this is all based off of kind of some work that the Lindner Group has done with the DNR researching barotrauma.
Yeah.
And, you know, just kind of their, I don't know if it's a real research study. That's still, I'm not sure of. Mm-mm. You know, I feel like a good research study would have some of the base level. Well, I mean, you do this stuff for work too, yep. but like you need a base level to compare to. And like, what's yep. the actual mortality rate of just catching a fish in general?
Yeah. Yeah. There was none of that.
Are we accounting for that? You know, that, I guess, yeah, Aaron's main argument was that fish only has so much energy. And if you're making it harder for him by being out of the water longer and doing additional steps, that energy is just going down.
Yep. Measuring them.
With everything.
Doing a fin clip, doing all yep. these other things. And by the time you do actually get them released, there's just no power left. Mm-hmm. And then the big issue with that, with the other study that he was discussing, was that they were releasing them back into a net.
Yep.
And then the fish just couldn't get back down to depth because mm-hmm. they wouldn't just go straight down. Fish don't just yep. swim straight down. They yep. kind of go at an angle, and they just kept running into that net.
And that makes sense. And they'd float up and yeah. die. And I think that what was interesting was Aaron brought this to life after the video was how old? I mean, the other
I don't know. I never saw the other one until then.
Yeah, old. I was thinking like 4 years. But
oh, okay.
It might not be. I need to look at that again. But when I remember seeing that video come out, and I remember thinking, oh yeah, makes sense.
Yeah,
you know, crappies fished deep generally yep. are not going to survive.
And well, and you that just was kind my of accepted that theory. It was just an accepted theory yep. because you'd see the eyes bulge.
Yep.
And he certainly caught fish that had bulged eyes.
Yep.
And he did his little process and sent him right yep. back down, and there was no like poking the swim bladder or doing anything mm-hmm. like that. He just make sure you get that little bubble air bubble out of their mouth, right, flip back over, send them back in.
Yep.
They're good
and,
to go.
And what was interesting is I think it's going to, well, number one, it's encouraged a discussion around this topic with a lot of people, right?
Yep.
And I think Aaron's point was trying to be able to use LiveScope in a way where you could not get that same result with any other tool. LiveScope enabled him to take yep. a fish out of the water in 33 feet of water, bring it to the surface, release it successfully, and watch it swim all the way down to its buddies.
Yep.
Right? What happens after that? Yes, that's something where it's unknown. Is it a delayed thing where 3 hours later it's floating to the surface? We don't know. And yep. and he was very clear about that. He's like, it's, I don't know.
That's the hole. That, like yep. in his process, that's what was we can his do. Hole.
And if you're in this situation, I don't think it necessarily has to mean that they're going to die, but
yeah.
It's a heck of a lot better than 76% or whatever they found that we're going to die.
Sure. And, I mean, I'm all for keeping fish, too.
Yeah.
If yep. you want to do it, then that completely negates the discussion or the concern.
Yep.
Keep them on the ice and eat them up.
I also found, I don't know if you saw this video, the Uncut Angling talks barotrauma on Sporting Journal Radio. They had Aaron Wiebe on and interviewed him about the video.
Oh, nice.
And he mentioned just about how much it's blown up and just getting the discussion going.
Well,
and
it's interesting because it really challenges a lot of traditional thought that people just kind of accept it.
Yep.
Like there was no
yep.
challenge to it. They're yep. just like, yeah, they die.
And he actually, he talked with the Minnesota DNR for quite a while after that video. Mm. And they're pumped about doing, you know, doing the study again, doing more studies.
Oh yeah. Well, they're pumped about funding. They're gonna do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's interesting though, he said the Manitoba DNR, not at all.
Really?
Yep. Not they're off that. Yeah. I don't, they're probably seeing Minnesota jumping on it and going, why don't we just wait till Minnesota?
Well,
does
I'll
it?
Tell you that people don't exactly go to Canada to go catch crappies either.
True. Yeah. Good point.
So, I don't know.
Good point. No, that was pretty interesting to hear the talk about that. But I know, glad Aaron's back making videos.
Well, he already made a video. I wouldn't say
he's got other ones coming. He already talked about it on that Sporting Journal.
Oh, did he?
Yep. He's got more coming out. He didn't say when.
Yeah.
But he's already had them done.
Oh, nice.
So that was exciting. I'm always a big Uncut Angling fan. You know, from back in the day and beyond, but. I guess one of the knocks that people had against Aaron, which I don't really think is fair, but you know, he does not always handle fish the best way in some of his videos.
What do you mean?
Specifically, they call it like the crappie video, where he's pulling crappies out of a school and putting them in a 5-gallon bucket.
Oh,
and then
sure.
release them later, right? So
that was the video that made him famous.
6 years ago, 7 years ago.
Yeah, it's been right? a while.
Like
we all learn.
I don't follow that argument. Like
yeah.
he gets better as he goes. And I think when he started in YouTube and started on the show Uncut Angling, he was, what, 16, 18?
Yeah.
You know, like...
How are you going to get that growing. Thumbnail with all those giant crappies in your hand if you don't put them in a bucket?
Yeah, exactly.
It's either that or you keep them.
And they were in, like, what, 10, 6, 8 feet of water?
I don't remember.
No, they were pretty shallow anyway, but...
I just remember he was using, like, a...
I just think
butt-tailed jig that he made from a dead deer on the side of the road.
People are always quick to judge other people that go and actually do the legwork themselves and actually try and make a hypothesis and try and prove it one way or the other. And you know, he put a lot of work into doing that, and I respect that. That's awesome. That's what we should all be working towards, and not just sitting at home pointing out flaws in whatever it is.
Oh, sure.
There's flaws in anything that. You know,
yeah, if you dig deep nature. Enough into any of it, you're going to find holes in something. But
and just the act of catching a fish, that's risky at best for the fish, right? Like
that's
you
the
never
risky
know
part.
What's going to happen.
Sure.
They're going to swallow
the gill,
hook.
Swallow it.
You break your pliers trying to get the hook out, and now you got to go dig around for another one, and then it takes 2 minutes, and then, okay, you're done for.
Yep.
Like that's just a reality that we face as fishermen.
So. One thing I really liked was just the challenge to traditional, largely accepted theories and terms and stuff. And I think that was cool.
Well, and he brought a good point of specifically basin crappies and live scope.
Yeah.
Where really the enemy to basin crappies is not live scope. It's mapping. If you have a map of a lake in winter, you're going to go to the deepest part of the basin and you're probably going to find crappies there.
Yep.
And he showed a whatever map and then
he just circled this
around
spot.
Was like, no, this is where you're fishing, this is where you're gonna find it. You don't need live scope to do that. Is live scope gonna make it easier to find to fish those? Maybe not. I mean, at that point an old school flasher does just fine. I mean, you search for the marks and go right down to them.
Well, he had a lot of concerns about, and specifically in Canada, about regulations around some of these technologies, and then also around crappie fishing and fishing in general, on how you can go about doing that sort of stuff. And I know, I believe he's gotten a little bit more into the political world with running for some offices and that sort of stuff. But it's an interesting aspect. It's something that I don't particularly think about a lot, which it certainly is, you know, something that to keep an eye on. And as outdoorsmen, hunters, anglers, that sort of stuff, the wolves are always at the door. And you really need to be there to guard the gate a little bit, whether you think it's a problem or not.
True.
Just to help educate, make sure people understand what's going on before those types of things are taken away from you.
Live scope is not the end all be all tool. You're not gonna go out and just be 100% better fisherman because of it. You still got to get the fish to bite. It might help you find fish. It's has its flaws as well, right? I feel like, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, you could spend live scope most of your trip using live scope, just trying to use it.
Absolutely.
And look at your screen and hunt down fish where fish are just avoiding the live scope.
Yeah.
You know,
there are, I will say there are situations that live scope might be detrimental to specific fish populations. A lot of your pelagic fish that are just like your muskies. I think open water, your big tunas, your swordfish, sailfish, that sort of stuff. It could certainly have an impact on those populations. But traditionally, especially muskies, people aren't traditionally keeping those anyways. But
There's just a good video, Uncut Angling, the Barrow Trauma video. I'll look up, see what it's actually called, but...
So it's just barrow trauma.
Really good stuff. Crappie barrow trauma, bad science truths and tips. It's got 101,000 views right now.
Ooh.
I think it needs to be blown up a little more than that. There are reaction videos. I should probably watch a few more of these all over the place on that video.
I can't. Awesome. I don't have the time in my life to watch someone else reacts to a video that I watched. I'll just react to it myself and call it a day.
I was going
to
say, that's what people are doing listening to us right now. Like, yeah, we don't.
Well, they didn't know what they clicked on.
Yeah, exactly. We just buried in the title somewhere. Nobody knows. Just another episode of the Short Rod Show.
Drinking some premiums.
Yeah, exactly.
Got premium light.
Green belt light out.
Still tonight. Working through them. Still working through cans. The
bucket. That bucket worked well on that turkey.
Did it?
I love that. Yep. Nice. Absolutely. And
I got probably half my cans left.
Half your cans? That's not bad.
Yep.
Heck yeah.
Well, I wanted to save a few for ice season.
Yeah. That will be. It just took a while. Take that in the bucket out on the ice.
Yeah.
Post up. But very good. Well, we'll have some more episodes here coming up this season. And absolutely, we'll be out on the ice, actually icing some fish.
Well, we got a special episode next week.
Yes. Super We're really excited about that.
Yeah.
It's going to be jazzed.
Got a special guest.
Yeah. We'll
finally get a guest on the episode this year.
We've been bad about that. It's life's gotten in the way a little bit.
Yeah. And then it's tough to schedule guests when we can barely schedule time for each other to get together.
Well, I haven't seen you in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yep. We figured it out here and have a lot of fun doing it. Keep the comments coming. Keep everything up on Facebook and helping everybody out with diesel heater tips and all that stuff. That's awesome. Good deal. We'll catch you next time on
The Short Rod Show.